just imagining things.
But the sea is boiling all around us. But the sea is boiling all around us. But the sea is boiling all around us. That green, horrible-looking creature with smoke and fire. Green, horrible, with smoke and fire. Green, horrible, smoke and fire. Green, horrible, smoke and fire. Creature with smoke and fire. Creature with smoke and fire. Creature with smoke and fire. Starting from its...
Beware. Beware.
Sea monsters will get you.
And will there be danger ahead, Pinta? Sea monsters? And will there be danger ahead, Pinta? Sea monsters? And will there be danger ahead, Pinta? Sea monsters? And will there be danger ahead, Pinta?
I remain in your brain, WRCT, right here, in the pits.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulp.
WRCT 88.3 FM. My name's Anthony Cacciato, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Happy Monday. Oh, the glorious, dreaded Monday before Election Day. Yes, tomorrow is Election Day in America, both here and everywhere else. But before we get into the mix of things, just a quick reminder that everything you hear today is not necessarily representative of the views of WRCT and are strictly my own. Yes, for these next 29 minutes, you are to be subjected to my ramblings and musings on the current socio-political landscape. But like I'd mentioned, yes, tomorrow's Election Day, and here in the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we have some very interesting things up on the ballot. But of course, the nation's eyes are watching some other places as well. We're kind of a bit of a second rung on the ladder set of races here in Pennsylvania, but very interesting things going on, especially as we get into the kind of last 48 hours of the horse race in some of these states. I guess we'll kind of look at what's going on in the rest of the country, and I guess we'll zoom in on Pennsylvania to close things out. But I was out of town last week and wasn't able to share some very good news with you guys. For those of you, speaking of elections, who have stuck around for a little bit, you'll happen to know that I'm quite fond of Javier Milei, who is the president of Argentina, who just last Sunday, Sunday night, the polls closed in Argentina in their midterm elections, and governing party, the Libertarians in Argentina, managed to pull off a 10-point win over the opposition, the Peronistas, the people who are kind of the big government kind of ruling party in Argentina since the 50s. Slowly but surely, their grip on the country is being chipped away at by the chainsaw-wielding wonderful man that is Javier Milei. He now has this wonderful one-third block in the Chamber of Deputies, which is their House of Representatives, and a similar block in their Senate to be able to override any kind of chance at overriding a veto by Milei is now gone, and he's now free to pursue his platform of making Argentina fiscally sane for once. But we'll keep a close eye on things over there because we might need to take notes sometime soon because we're making a lot of the mistakes that got Argentina in that place in the first place. And speaking of making mistakes like Argentina, the New York City mayoral election. Oh, what a wonderful joy that's been, and it needs to be over now. This is kind of like the centerpiece of the attention going into tomorrow. Recent polls that kind of rounded out October has Mamdani ahead still, but now kind of getting into high single digits, whereas Mamdani had a controlling lead of double digits, low double digits, some polls even putting him into the 20-point range. But a recent Atlas Intel poll that came out has him at up by about 7 points. Andrew Cuomo still in second place with 34% of the vote compared to Zoran Mamdani's 41% of the vote. But a shocking, shocking percent here. Curtis Sliwa jumping to almost a quarter of the vote per this poll over here. Is this a sign that we might get Andrew Cuomo in third place? Remains to be seen, but Curtis Sliwa was a man full of surprises. We'll see how that bears out. You know, ever since the primary, it has been blanketly assumed that this is Mamdani's race to lose. I don't think there's been a single poll since the primary that has had Cuomo up. There is one, and it's not a great pollster anyways. So it does look indeed like the consensus has been a Mamdani victory this whole time. But what does this mean? What exactly is in store for New York City following a Mamdani win? Many people have been quick to point out a number of his economic policies are not, shall we say, sound by any metric. you want to talk about Argentina, I've spoken about this on the show before, but you look at rent control. Freezing the rent is a cornerstone of the Mamdani campaign promise. What the problem is, generally when you go about doing that, you can see this kind of in Argentina where it's been implemented and then rescinded. When you cap the rent, it's great for the people that have access to the rent-stabilized apartments, but then two things happen. One, if you are someone who is doing the renting of apartments, it becomes very expensive relative to the amount of money that you're bringing in. You don't really want to rent anymore. It's a headache. You know, any sort of costs you incur, you can't really reflect that in the rents. So what do? You get out of the business of renting. And this happens a lot with rent-stabilized apartments where they have issues with things like asbestos in the walls. And, you know, how do you get rid of the asbestos? You need to do an asbestos cleanup, and you usually take that out of security. Or, you kind of have to reflect the very costly endeavor of removing asbestos from these apartments. And what happens? They can't do it because it's too expensive and you don't have the ability to take in extra rental income to fix that. So what happens? These rent-stabilized apartments sit empty. There are tens of thousands of these apartments which sit empty in New York City because they are asbestos-laden and generally unlivable. So all this to say, you know, there's this kind of crisis of affordability because the available supply of rental units is just not nearly what it needs to be in order to meet the demand. And you have all of these apartments, which because you can't raise the additional revenue through rent, just kind of sit there because it's cheaper to just let them sit unoccupied than it would be to do the actual cleanup and then rent it again. So you're going to end up with a significantly larger amount of those properties going forward under a rent control regime. And you can see just how much this has, been the case in places like Argentina, too, which had national rent control. And upon removing the rent control regulation, actually led to an almost immediate reduction in rents by about, I think, 20% was the figure. The rental stock shot up. And, you know, in large part has to do with the fact that nobody wants to rent in that sort of environment. Nobody wants to be the person responsible for basically renting below market value. It's you're operating at a loss. So unless, you know, you're a large conglomerate, you know, a lot of the people that are kind of railing against the kind of current rent thing, and, you know, demanding a freezing of the rent are the same people that are kind of very opposed to the idea of corporate landlords. Ironically, the only people who can afford to rent out at a loss in a lot of these cases are the corporate landlords. So what do you get? You get a double whammy. There's less apartments for rent, and a larger share of them are owned by corporate landlords. So you've kind of put yourself in a precarious situation as a result of that. And this is only on the matter of rent control. I mean, we're talking about a host of other things that are going to be kind of put out there as mayoral policy. Government grocery stores, you know, you run into similar problems with kind of market interfering there. But the big one, I think, that a lot of people are going to have to grapple with is the free buses. Because for those of you who haven't been in New York City, there are a lot of buses, and we already have quite the issue with fare evasion there. You know, you do very quickly get rid of the issue of fare evasion if the buses are free, but then, you know, the fares raise the money, and if money isn't coming from fares, then, you know, where's the money coming from? And that brings us to two things. One, a proposed increase in taxes on corporations and higher income individuals, which, you know, sounds good on paper until you realize that, sure, maybe, you know, the tax rate that, you know, would be unique to New York City would be equal to, I think they're comparing to New Jersey, but you're not considering the fact that, you know, there's state taxes and other wonderful taxes, which result in an actual corporate tax rate which far exceeds New Jersey, and you'll have the mass exodus of companies operating in Manhattan to New Jersey, and why would we wish that upon anybody to banish them to Jersey? But also considering the fact that, you know, I believe it's a plurality of the actual tax income that is funding New York City government comes from top 1% of earners. I'm kind of going off the cuff here. I believe it's 48%. It's somewhere between 35 and 45. I can guarantee that. But the plurality of tax income is coming from these top 1% earners. You know, you're the disproportionate share that's already being made up of tax income from income tax on these people. And this happened when Spitzer was governor of New York, and they attempted a hike on the 1% tax. And what happened? People left. And when, you know, people leave, you end up getting the bottom falls out on your revenue. You actually end up, and this is kind of the idea behind the Laffer curve, proposed by Art Laffer, wonderful guy. But, you know, it's kind of when you push the envelope a little too far, then the people that were providing, you know, this massive block of the tax income decide, you know what, I'm going to go somewhere else. And they take all that money with them. And then, you know, you really think you don't have money to do free buses now. You think about what it's going to be like when all these people you know, decide to make their Florida residence full-time. Governor Kathy Hochul has said that she's not going to allow this to happen. She's basically kind of drawn the red line with a lot of these proposals being put forward by Mamdani. We'll see how this fares for her when she is put before the voters in both her primary and the general election. The Manhattan Institute actually has a poll with Elise Stefanik, who is expected to be the Republican nominee for governor in New York, actually ahead by a point with, you know, I think it was 20% undecided, so there's a lot a lot of room for error there, but you know, interesting things to consider as we look towards next cycle, which will obviously have some very, very exciting things going on. But also, of course, on the topic of New Jersey, of course, New Jersey does have their gubernatorial election this cycle as well. Former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli facing off against Representative Mickey Sherrill in a nail-biter of an election right now. Atlas Intel also pulled that race, and Jack Cittarelli is lagging by just 1 point behind Sherrill. Right now, it looks on the ground to be extremely, extremely competitive. I was there, when I said I was out of town last week, I was out in New Jersey at Monmouth County for Jack Cittarelli, and there's a lot of sentiment on the ground that suggests that, and I forget who did this poll, it might have been the Atlas Intel poll, where there was a question on there, was like, based on, it was basically a vibes-based poll, you know, like, who do you think your neighbors and your family are voting for? And it was like 53-47 Jack Cittarelli. And that I think is an interesting sign of how kind of the undecideds break in this election. You know, kind of a big thing going on in Jersey right now. You have the Phil Murphy fatigue that has set in over quite a bit of time. I mean, that kind of reflected itself in the primary for the Democratic nominee. A Murphy was not wanted again. Well, actually, no, she ran for Senate, that was. Yes. Yeah, it all kind of meshes together at a certain point, but all this to say, the only thing that I think Mickey Sherrill has going for her at this point is the national environment. It's playing into New York City's election, it's playing into Virginia especially, but looking at Jersey as well, kind of the anti-Trump reflexive voting pattern seems to be a large factor, especially it looks like a lot of the kind of attacks from, you know, Mamdani on Cuomo or from Sherrill on Cittarelli is proximity to or kind of a lack of adamant opposition to Donald Trump. And we'll see how much of a deciding factor that is when it comes to, you know, placing that alongside potentially economic concerns, public safety concerns, any number of other things which can be kind of front of mind for voters when they hit the polls. Very interesting thing to consider with New Jersey, though. And this is kind of also the case in New York City. But apparently early voting in some very heavily Orthodox Jewish communities, the lines are long. Lines are very long. And if the kind of endorsement patterns of rabbis in those communities kind of hold as they do in, you know, any of these communities, usually that endorsement results in near unanimous voting support for the you know, the person who's endorsed. So Cittarelli's pretty much sweeped all those endorsements, so that seems to be a lock for him, and might be what he needs to get over the line. Of course, though, we can't forget about Virginia. Virginia is what some in the business might call a lost cause for Republicans. It's a, you know, not a question of will Spanberger win so much as it's how much will she win by. And that number seems to have been narrowing. You know, while there's still polls that have Spanberger in the double digits, it looks as though she's starting to slip into the mid to high single digits, you know, in very large part due to the scandals which have plagued her ticket mate, Jay Jones, who's running for attorney general, who got into some hot water over some texts that he sent that had to deal with certain violent action against a certain elected official in Virginia. It was not a good look, and may be weighing Spanberger down a little bit. If anything, the one kind of silver lining for Virginia Republicans, it seems to be this race, will be the re-election of the incumbent Republican Attorney General. Remains to be seen, though. There's so much to watch going into tomorrow. But before we kind of switch over to what's going on in our own backyard, and believe me, there's plenty going on in our backyard, just wanted to let you guys know that Parkinson's disease afflicts 1 million people in the United States and Canada. But people who have the disease can have a meaningful and productive life. Guidelines from the American Academy of Neurology help neurologists make early, accurate diagnoses and optimize proven and effective therapies. The guidelines also promote screening and treatment of hallucinations, depression, and dementia, which affect many people with Parkinson's disease. The guidelines also help neurologists track how quickly the disease may progress and tailor treatment, which may include drugs, surgery, exercise, or physical therapy accordingly. Patients should have regular contact with the neurologist to find the correct treatment for them and to help maintain optimal quality of life. Bottom line, the guidelines help improve the care and lives of people with Parkinson's disease. For more information on the guidelines, visit the American Academy of Neurology website at AAN.com. Again, that was AAN.com. Also, WRCT is supported by Remaster Media. Remaster Media is an online tool that can reprocess and optimize audio sound for internet and broadcast settings for both professional and personal use. They offer tools that can add depth, clarity, and stereo imaging to audio and video, as well as noise reduction features to eliminate buzz and hiss from remote or phone recordings. More information on how to reprocess audio or video is available at remastermedia.com. And if you're interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email PR at WRCT for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. And then lastly, of course, we do have some shows here on WRCT. Firstly, we've got From Here to Eternity. Everyone thinks they know the 80s hits, but on the other side of the Atlantic lies a treasure trove of synth-drenched sounds that filled the airwaves of Europe back in the day. Take a trip back to the 80s that you never knew with DJ Tony Tunes, From Here to Eternity, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. And you can also tune into Kaleidoscope, an eclectic hour of music with your very own DJ Kate, Thursdays at 5 p.m. only on WRCT Pittsburgh. Add to the colorful mix by calling in requests. And of course, if you would like to voice your opinions, concerns, and whatever it may be that you would like to add for our consideration and discussion next week, you can call after the show at 412-268-9728. Again, that's 412-268-9728, or if you like letters, 412-CMU-WRCT. Again, 412-CMU-WRCT. Feel free to give a call after our show ends today. On Monday, if you're listening on Friday, don't call. I will probably be asleep, considering how early this reruns. but, kind of switching gears to Pennsylvania. Of course, we have a very important, kind of widely publicized judicial retention going on at the state level. Of course, there are three people on the bench that are up for judicial retention, and usually this is kind of a unceremonious kind of okay whatever that will go over if people even remember to turn over their ballots and vote in it. And from my knowledge, I think only one judge has ever been kind of barred from retention in the last 50 years. So it's a very rare incident when this does occur, but a lot of attention has been drawn to the retention this cycle, especially considering the implications of rulings made by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on a number of important issues, and you know what the implications of that might be for future legal challenges that may arise in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Millions of dollars have been poured into this, and it I don't think anyone has been pulling on it, to my knowledge. That's a good question if they have, because, I mean, definitely the people have been out in the field kind of doing the regular campaign that you'd expect for, you know, any sort of ballot measure or anything like that. But I don't believe there's been any polling. It looks like No, there is no polling on this, but it looks like there's been a tremendous amount of money poured into the yes to retention. It looks like that's 4-1 in spending, but we're talking, $9.1 million as of October 30th. That is a... that's a lot of money for an election that usually goes under the radar. But that's where the fun and exciting kind of statewide stuff is right now. Of course, there are other seats that are up on the Commonwealth Court and the Superior Court. But we do have quite a bit going on here in Allegheny County, and not a lot of people are talking about it, but there are some very competitive elections in Allegheny County, particularly in our county council elections. District 1 is poised to be the battleground for this election. District 1, which comprises Moon Township, Ross Township, and a number of other municipalities in between, is around 15 total, is going to be the front line for whether or not Republicans have a pickup opportunity on the county council. It is a fairly Republican district. I believe it narrowly, and I mean narrowly, went for Trump in 2024. I can find that out, but while I look into that real quick, it is left trending, so whether or not that's going to have the effect of in the off-cycle elections also producing some Democrat favorable outcomes remains to be seen. But this seat was last up for election in 2021, where the race took an unexpected turn with the death of the Republican candidate just a few days before the election. Regardless, the race was actually incredibly close considering that, and the individual who occupies the seat right now is not running for re-election, so looks like by 3,000 votes it went to Harris, this district. But all this to say that it handily went for Joe Rocky, so off-cycle elections potentially have a great deal of difference here, especially when you consider the candidates that are running in this race. You have two Moon Township natives, Mary Jo Wise running as the Republican and Kathleen Madonna Emmerling running as the Democrat, both of which vying for this seat. Mary Jo Weiss is a current Moon Township supervisor, elected a couple years ago, and Kathleen Madonna Emmerling, having no prior elected experience. Both of them are duking it out for the seat. It will remain to be seen, kind of. It's a turnout game at the end of the day, because the thing is, you know, you have Ross Township, which is a fairly Democratic electorate. That's kind of the Democratic vote sink of the area. Anything that is northeast of the, I believe, Allegheny River, that is over there, that's going to be kind of more of Emmerling's strength. But of course, going westbound into Moon Township and Findlay Township, those are going to be areas of strength for Mary Jo Weiss. Remains to be seen to what degree either will turn out, but also very importantly, Ross Township did swing heavily for Joe Rocky. I believe most of the precincts, if not all, went to Joe Rocky in the county executive election, which be an interesting consideration when looking into how voters over there, moderate Democrats, will weigh the candidates. These elections tend to be fairly low information, so I wouldn't be surprised if most Democrats were lacking in the knowledge that Kathleen Madonna Emmerling is a good pal of Bethany Hallam and Sarah Namorado. And was door knocking with Bethany Hallam out in Moon Township. Sends a particular message about the type of legislator we'd be getting out of Kathleen Madonna Merling. So, interesting things. But, of course, you know, the other kind of competitive race that we might have here is for the, the at-large minority seat. That's going to be between incumbent Republican Mike Imbrascia and Alex Rose, who's running on the labor line, but is for all intents and purposes, the running as a Democrat in anything but name, because legally a Democrat cannot occupy the majority and minority seat on the county council. So the interesting thing there is whether or not third-party ballot registration is going to be a plus or a minus in the eyes of most voters, and whether or not that's going to be enough of a problem for Rose to potentially allow Embracia to slip through on this one. Of course, the countywide elections for Republicans are not easy, to put it that way. But all this to say, there's a lot to keep an eye on. But of course, if anything, if you are registered to vote, of course, you can make it out to the polls between, I believe it is 7 and 8 p.m. tomorrow. You find your polling place and make your way out there. Voting is important, especially in our local elections. But thank you so much for joining me here today. It was a pleasure as always. You guys have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care and God bless.
About the risks of vaping, because when you talk, they hear you.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM.
Hi, this is Kenny.
And Amanda Smith from Nashville, Tennessee.
Keep it right here on WRCT Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. My name is Aubriana. On our music calendar, we have Pink Shift with Lust Sick Puppy and Combat on Sunday, November 9th at 7:30 p.m. Then on Monday, November 10th at Spirit Hall, we have Lolo with Alex Peratt at 8 p.m. Then on Tuesday, November 11th, we have the Arcadian Wild at Thunderbird at 8 p.m. Then on Wednesday, November 12th at the Roboto Project, we have Pretty Pity and Out in Front with Panic Landing at 7 p.m. Then this Wednesday, one of my favorite bands, Toledo, is performing at the Club Cafe at 7 p.m. Now onto our event calendar. Stop by the Pittsburgh Banjo Club's regular rehearsal every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Founded in 1988, the Pittsburgh Banjo Club is an all-volunteer band and organization that uses banjos, trumpets, tubas, and bass to perform popular music from the 1920s and 1930s. The Pittsburgh Banjo Club rehearses at the Allegheny Elks Lodge No. 339 at 400 Cedar Avenue in the North Side. Food and refreshments are available. Reservations must be made by Tuesday at 5 p.m. for each Wednesday event. Call 412-321-1834 for reservations. If you or your organization would like an event included in the WRCT radio calendar, please send the details at least 2 weeks in advance to radio-calendar@wrct.org. Now from the CMU event calendar, the University Library introduces Here to Stay, celebrating 40 years at the Architecture Archives. This University Library's exhibition celebrates the 40th anniversary of the Architecture Archives, which was founded to create, conserve, and promote the rich history of Pittsburgh's buildings and tell part of the story of this dynamic city. Now on to Somewhere in Time.
When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band. He said, "Son, when you grow up, would you be